Good morrow, and welcome to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, this is a vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis that specialize in a plethora of art forms. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com or follow me at jvhilliardbooks on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. You can also look for me on Facebook and Discord as just JV Hilliard. I want to thank our sponsor tonight, again, Altered Reality Magazine, which is a magazine that specializes in helping be the first portal to publication for a lot of speculative authors and speculative poets. And so as we reach our witching hour, let me cast my magic message spell and take control of the airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you Dungeons and Dragons nerds out there, I know what you know. I know who you are. You know that you're one of them, too. So just like me, the duration of my transmutation magic is about 30 minutes. So set your sundials and let's enter my realm together. Today, we're chronicling the adventures of fellow speculative fiction scribe, Leah Pileggi. Leah is an author, a poet, a screenwriter, and a world traveler, and Prisoner 88 is her first novel. We'll be talking a lot about that tonight. So, Leah, well met, and welcome to the realm.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Joe.
It is my pleasure. Tell our listeners about you, what you write, and where they can find you.
My website is just my name. It's leahpileggi.com. You can go there, and I have a lot of different things on there. I've got some of my poetry on there. I have links to all the things that I've written. I tend to write for children mostly. I do occasionally write letters to the editor that get published in magazines. I've done a little bit of journalism. I had a short script accepted by lady filmmakers for a table read. So I've done a lot of different things. So my website, leahpileggi.com, has everything on there. And that includes my middle grade historical novel, Prisoner 88, that we're going to talk about a lot today, that was set in the 1880s. And I guess we'll get into that. You'll probably ask a bunch of questions, and I got a bunch of answers.
Well, cool. Like, I'm looking forward to this because I read it. When we first met, the story behind it was just so cool. I was like, I got to get my hands on this. And it was a nice, tight, short read. Mm-hmm. I fired through it over a weekend. And it has one of the best backstories of any novel I've ever read, because it's almost too good to be true, but it's true. So tell our listeners a little bit about it, like the story itself, and then your inspiration of why you felt you had to write it once you learned about it.
Yeah, I was in Boise, Idaho for an afternoon. I had a couple of hours to kill, so I went to the old Idaho penitentiary and went on the tour. It was 100 degrees. People were dropping out of the tour because it's an old penitentiary. It's been closed since the 1970s, and a lot of it's outdoors. I got to the end of the tour, and the docent said the youngest prisoner ever here was 10 years old. And I said, I want to read that book, because I had just then started writing. I thought that I wanted to write for young people. So I asked him, I said, what's the book that this is about? And he said, well, there isn't any book. But it turned out there was a whole bunch of research. So it was sort of sitting there waiting for someone to find this story. James Oscar Baker had been 10 years old. He was with his father in a saloon in 1885 in Soda Springs, Idaho, and a fight broke out. And James Oscar Baker's father had been wounded in the Civil War, couldn't move very well, and when the man was threatening to kill him, we don't know for sure, but we assume that he just said to the boy, pick up the gun and shoot him, and he did. One shot, and the man died right there in the saloon. So some of the great research that I came across was newspaper clippings from the time, which if anybody loves old newspapers, wow, it's crazy, because whatever stories came in, they just put them one after the other. There might be something about a tea party, and then there's a shooting in Soda Springs, and then there's some political thing, and it just all runs together. But I have various articles about what happened, and they're similar. Some of it seems a little bit editorialized, I guess, but interesting to read. And I also got the transcript from the trial of this 10-year-old boy. He and his father had both been accused of shooting this man, but apparently James Oscar's father was not a great guy and somehow got himself out of it. So 10-year-old James Oscar was the only one who was on trial. Shall I go on?
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, you stole one of my questions already. I was going to say, how did you research? It sounds like it was sort of gift wrap for you. But this has got to be a tough write. And what I mean by that is, much of what you researched is kind of anachronistic. I mean, a 10-year-old going to an adult prison, just mm-hmm. people wouldn't even put up with that these days.
Right.
So you have this like dated material, and it had to be kind of foreign to you, and many like me. I mean, like, I wouldn't even know. When you said that first, I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? Like, this actually happened. I mean, what was it like to delve a little deeper? Because most of our listeners are either readers or writers. I mean, that's just what they are. So
right.
a lot of creatives in and around the space, so artists of many paths. But, you know, for us, you know, a lot of folks, you know, are probably interested in how you did this while ferreting through some stuff, like you said, that might have been editorialized. I mean, were there things in that research that you had to edit out of the book because it was either too shocking or too jarring, or you didn't believe it? Or, you know, how was that process for you?
One of the things that was most helpful, I found a retired judge in Idaho who was a history buff, and I asked him if he would help interpret the trial transcript, which he said he would be glad to do. So I sent it to him, and
that
he read cool. the whole thing. And that was a huge help, because what he said was that this 10-year-old boy did have a lawyer. And we're talking about Idaho was a territory at the time. It wasn't even a state, very sparsely populated. And yet this young boy was able to have a lawyer represent him. However, the lawyer told him that if he didn't plead guilty to manslaughter, a jury would probably find him guilty of first-degree murder. So what's a 10-year-old boy going to do? He followed the advice.
Yeah, how does a 10-year-old process that?
Right. We don't know. That we don't
and,
know.
And why wasn't this like a self-defense thing? It sounds to me like they were under assault, right?
I think things were very, this was the Wild West, pretty much. And at that time, there was only one place that anyone could be incarcerated, which was the penitentiary, which was just in the process of being built. And, I mean, there wasn't anything like juvenile detention. So as soon as he pleaded guilty, he was going to have to be incarcerated. Those were the laws. And the only place he could go was to the penitentiary. So that's how that happened. So I found all the information about what happened that caused him to go in there. And I did find out when he was released, but I couldn't find anything about what his life was like while he was there. I mean, how did a 10-year-old survive in a penitentiary with murderers and, you know, cattle thieves? And there were people from other countries who had come here. There were Chinese workers from the railroad who may have ended up in the penitentiary. There were, and everyone of course was much older. So what I did was write the story of what his life would have been like while he was in the penitentiary. So that's what this book is, Prisoner 88. And he was actually number 88 of all the prisoners who went into the penitentiary. I have his intake record. He was 4'6" tall.
That's amazing. Like, it's crazy. That, like, it's so weird because I can't fathom this happening. And, you know, a judge not giving some sort of summary, like, clearly the kid didn't have the gun. Clearly he was under orders from his father. I mean, it's just such a weird, weird mm-hmm. story. But how was it? So let's get back to your experience at the penitentiary for a second.
Okay.
Like, how was walking through there and finding out about this story? I mean, what part of it moved you? Like, when was it where you were like, look, I'm writing this story. I'm going to get this research. I'm going to talk to the judge. I'm going to talk to the docent. I'm going to talk to everybody I can. I'm the one that's supposed to deliver this story for everyone else. And knowing that you write for like middle grade and YA primarily, did you know that you were going to focus the book? Because this could easily be an adult, like, mm-hmm. crazy crime story kind of thing. Like, what made you choose the path you chose when you published it?
Well, you know, I stuck it out when it was so hot, and because I found the whole place to just be sort of pulling me in. I just wanted to be there, which I can't really explain. And the tour started out with maybe 20 people, and by the end, I think there were three of us left. And that's when he said the youngest prisoner had been 10 years old. And it just felt like, well, my first instinct was, I want to read that book. And as soon as I found out there wasn't a book, I felt like, oh, is this what I'm supposed to write? And because I had really, at that time, made the decision that I really wanted to write for young people, it never was ever anything other than going to be a middle grade novel. But then the second part of the story has to do with not when I was at the penitentiary, but when someone else was there. I got an email a couple of years after the book was published from someone I didn't know with a cryptic question. Do you have any pictures of James Oscar Baker when he was young? And what more can you tell me about the real boy? And so I wrote back and said, I'm sorry, who are you? And it was someone who had gone to the penitentiary on a tour and had a five-year-old boy with her. And she said this kid was very rambunctious. But when they got there, and, you know, there's a lot of green space, so that people will actually take picnics there, and they do other events because it's kind of beautiful outside. So she had taken this little boy, it was with a group of kids, and this rambunctious kid, all of a sudden his personality sort of changed. And she said, what's going on? Are you okay? And he said, this is a five-year-old kid, I used to live here.
And that's said, just so, when you told me that the first time, that you want to talk about chills up your spine. That is the creepiest story. So I'm sorry, I didn't
mean
to interrupt
you,
but I had to.
No, I was so confused, you know, initially. But then she said, what do you mean that you lived here? And he said, I was in here. And he pointed across the lawn to a faraway building. He said, that's where the laundry is done. And it was. It was the building where the laundry had been for all the time that the penitentiary had been open. And she said, but who are you? And he said, Baker. My name's Baker. So James Oscar Baker was the real boy. But I don't use that name in the book. Know how this five-year-old boy thought he was there. But it sort of reinforced to me that this was the story that I was supposed to find, because James Oscar really wanted someone to tell his story.
That is so, I mean, it is still to this day, I can hear that so many times and it's still creepy to me. I watched a show once on Netflix, which was about past lives. It was one of those things, it was like a Halloween thing or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I'm in, I'll watch it. And they had this show about a kid that thought he was an actor and a director, and he got like 60 out of 100 questions right about this guy that he never met. And it's like a reincarnation story. And another kid that was born who would draw pictures of himself in a plane crashing in the ocean, and then they found out he would recite stuff about, you know, the family that he used to belong to, and he had this nickname. It was Jimmy Three, and no one understood what that meant. But when they talked to one of the World War II guys, there were three Jimmys that were on the ship, and the one that crashed in the plane in the ocean was a man that they called Jimmy Three because he was the third Jimmy. You know, and you're just like, this can't be true. And here you are, you know, this wrapped up, you know, gift boat, like a boat, you know, everything just handed gifted to you. This story is just, it's so phenomenal. So like, what has been the reaction from your middle grade readers and or their families to this? Do they look at it as a ghost story? Do they look at it as like historical? Like, I don't even know how would you quantify it in our genre as to what it is? It's like, it's a true story, but it's also, I mean, the middle grade students that read it have nightmares, or are they intrigued by it? What has been the reaction? Yeah.
This is a middle grade novel, and that doesn't come into the book. If you buy the book and read it, that piece of the story isn't in there. That's something that came up after it had been published, and I haven't actually talked. I do talks at schools sometime. I haven't actually told any young people that particular story. So I wanted to sort of protect the family too, because I did actually talk with this boy's mother, and she was totally confused, of course. And she said some other things that he had said too. So the kids read the story, the historical novel, and the information they have is that there was a real boy, and I did all of the research, and then I wrote his story based on the information that I had. So I'm not freaking out kids. I'm not trying to do that. but maybe next time I talk to kids, maybe older kids, I will tell them that experience and ask them what they think.
Yeah, what would they think of that? Yeah, that's crazy. So, well, let's pivot for a second and talk about you as a writer. So I know that you write over multiple genres, and I think this is important for a lot of our listeners because, again, as either authors or readers, people have strong opinions on that. Some people say write in your space and only in your space because, mm-hmm. you know, you get lost and you know, in this mass, this infinite sea of authors, it's already hard enough to kind of brand yourself. Others say just, you know, hey, write whatever comes to you because if it's a good story, someone's going to read it. I know you write in middle grade. I know you write in young adult. And I know you write in adult, from historical fiction to whatever. Do you have a favorite, you know, genre to write in and or age group to write in? And why is that your favorite?
There's something that I've been working on, which is actually an early reader series. This is for emergent readers, you know, first grade, second grade, that type of thing. Okay, so I come to writing from, I think there are two perspectives. One is that people want to write a book. And the other is that some people just love words and arranging words. I come from that world, that I just love words. I like poetry. I like writing sparse. You know, you mentioned this book is, it's not incredibly long, but that's the way I am. I'm a very sort of, you would call it a tight writer. I like the early reader series that I've written because every word counts. And that isn't to say that in, you know, even a long novel, not every word counts. But when you have to think so strategically of using just a single word or how a single word can change the whole feeling of a page, I really love that type of thing. I've published some poetry, rhyming poetry for children. That's way harder than people think it is. People start out writing for children. It's like, oh, I want to write a storybook, a picture book, and it rhymes. But it's so hard to get it right. So I almost look at it as a puzzle to be solved, finding just the right words. Writing longer pieces, I have a couple of historical novels that I'm working on right now, and they are longer. They're definitely longer, but there's more story. But my writing style is still to be sparse. So I would say if I could write a lot of early readers, I would do that. Unfortunately, the market is sort of flooded with them right now. It's not a great sell. you know how it is. You can write something and absolutely love it, and you don't know if it's going to get out there or not. But.
Well, have you ever felt that that's limiting, like in the sense that it's hard for readers to find you, or is it liberating, giving you the freedom to write like a Swiss Army knife? Like you can write, you know, emergent, you can write YA, you can write adult. I mean, do you find yourself getting kind of caught up in that wash where you're just like, hey, you have to come and find me? Or do you not just care and you're doing it for the art form of it? Like you said, it's almost like it's the satisfaction of completing that puzzle and knowing that you did a good job, you know, and, you know, it gets bought by 50 people or 500 people, it doesn't matter to you. Like, where do you fall into that? Or is it a mix of both?
At this point in my life, I'm 65, you know. I have published a few things. I don't know what else is going to happen out there. So at this point, I've really decided to do what I love. I'm going to write what I love, what I think makes sense. I've been struggling with one thing that I had started, and I finally set it aside today. It's like, no, I don't think that's what I feel that I want to work on right now. So for me, it's going to have to be something that I love, and especially historical fiction. If anybody else writes, and even a lot of fantasy, you still have to do research. You know, there may be some obscure topics that you not need to learn about, and it, you know, when it's stuff that you love, and you get down the rabbit hole, and you're finding new stuff. That's the good stuff. That's when it's really fun.
I tell people all the time that one of the craziest things I've had to do was find out how a privy in a castle worked. Which is, for those who don't know what that is, it's basically the latrine. It's the,
sure,
the place where you go to the bathroom, and
yeah,
you know, and how it worked, because you know, I had a scene where a character was killed and pushed down one to hide the body, and then a lowly servant who had to clean the latrine out into the river finds the remains, and I didn't even know that. I had no idea any of that, so I had to like do that. So you're right on the research stuff. It is, sometimes it's crazy, but. And that's a fantasy story, you know, but it has to be somewhat believable in that respect. But
I've done bathroom research too, because the two books I'm working on right now are both set during the California Gold Rush. So in 1849 in Buffalo, New York, were there privies in a hotel? I had to do the research and find out.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I meant before when I said, you know, it's hard to write things that have a historical perspective unless you know, and that takes so much research. And
it does, and you can read. Sometimes it takes three. You have to read three books to be able to assuredly write one sentence, so that you can stand behind it and know that it's based on facts.
Oh yeah, and it has to be in the right voice. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I totally get it. Yeah. Well, you mentioned before you write poetry. I know you write novels, and I know that you've done screenplays. I mean, do you have a favorite form that you write in?
You know, I did the screenplays during COVID. That's something that I decided I had thought about doing for a long time, and I really gave that a try. I think that I would have loved to do that. I think I would have written screenplays if I had found writing early on. I didn't start writing until I was in my 40s. But I think when I was younger, if I had the guts to just say, I want to try this, I think that I probably would do screenplays. That would be my main thing.
So,
but for now,
go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, but I'm loving the middle grade historical spot. You know, writing for kids that are 10, 11, 12 years old, basing it on the history. I mean, that feels like home to me.
That's cool. You know, and as long as you find your level, I mean, that's all that's important, right? Then you're just happy writing what you're writing. But I was going to ask, which of those poetry, novels, or screenplays, which of them did you find the most difficult to write and why? You know, it sounds to me like you like what you're doing with the sparse and tight writing that you do. So I'm going to guess that poetry might come to you the easiest, but I'm not sure. So I figured I'd ask, which of those is the most difficult for you?
The thing about poetry to me is that I love it and I hate it. And it depends on the day and how I feel and what I'm doing, because I can go for a week and I can write a poem a day. And you know, some of them are junk, but some of them have something. And then I'll be like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a poet. And I just put it away for a couple of weeks. And then it's like, oh, okay, this sounds like a poem. And then I'm back at it again. So it's a real love-hate thing with the poetry. But when it's working, it feels great.
I got you. So what's next for you? I mean, do you have any work in progress? I know you mentioned you had a couple of, some of like Gold Rush stories that you were working on. Is that what's coming up for those that want to read it?
Well, yes. So I call this my sibling books, because there are two books, Anna's Journey and Alfred's Journey, and they're brother and sister, and they're both set during the California Gold Rush, and their timeline is exactly the same. They start on the same day and they end on the same day. There's too much story to do a dual narrative in one book. It would just be ridiculously long for middle grade. And I wanted to expand on each one of their stories, because Anna goes across the country with her mother to get from Boston to California. Alfred goes with his father on a schooner from Boston down around South America. So they're totally separate journeys, but they're at exactly the same time, and we get to hear about the other sibling from the other one as they're going. So I've talked, my editor's aware of it, saw a very early draft, very early, a couple of years ago. So we'll see. I don't have a contract for that, but, you know, maybe someday. And I have the early reader series and a couple of picture books, actually, that relate to that. And if you think early reader series is sparse, picture books are a whole nother universe. Really, people think, oh, I'll just write a picture book. So hard to get the story arc in such a few number of words. But I have a couple of those. I also have one of those with my editor, so we'll see about that. I have a novel that is a category that's called New Adult. And I'm not exactly sure who all calls it New Adult. So you have Young Adult, New Adult, and then Adult. So New Adult is sort of a category that shifts the characters from high school into college. And it's set in 1976, and there's a tie-in with the Equal Rights Amendment. So it's not overtly political, but it is also a Me Too novel. So I'm in the process. I've been querying that and haven't had a taker yet. But it's done. I love it. I'm going to keep sending it out. So those are the things I'm working on right now. But the historical novel, Alfred and Anna, that's what I'm really focusing on at the moment. Now, you know another story that I'm working on, too, that has to do. It's called Bird Dog. I've kind of set that aside for now because it's gotten bigger than I expected. It started out as kind of like a short story and then a short series, and now it's sort of broadened itself and it's gotten much bigger. So I'm going to hold off and work on that maybe at the beginning of the year.
Well, good. Well, hey, look, we're coming to the end of our time. I want to ask you a couple of lightning round questions, so I hope you don't mind. We're going to have to breeze through these pretty quickly. So are you ready to go?
Do it. Yep.
All right. So you're invited to a lunch with one other author and one other poet, living or dead. Who would they be?
Poet Naomi Shihab Nye, for sure. Oh, my gosh, writer. Donna Gephardt is a middle grade writer who I love. She's a dear friend, and I would love to have a meal with her at any time.
That's cool. Cool. So, hey, look, I also know you're a world traveler. So what's your favorite place in the world to go?
We went to Sicily a few years ago and absolutely loved it. Loved the food, loved the people. It was so interesting. We went up onto the Mount Etna to the volcano. Loved it. My husband's Italian, Bileggi.
Oh, there you go. Well, of course. So, you know, as an author, and I think this will appeal to our readers, what is the best money you've ever spent as an author?
I'll tell you what, I just spent it, and I haven't quite used it yet. I am going to the NCTE conference, convention, actually, in a couple of weeks. That's the National Council of Teachers of English. And it's going to be in Columbus, Ohio this year. This is for teachers of English from preschool through college and for people who teach teachers. And it's all about the English language and writing. And they're going to be authors and teachers and
That's
librarians.
Cool.
And Tom Hanks is doing the keynote speech. So there you go.
Oh, you can't beat that. That'd be worth some money in and of itself. Well, Leah, thank you very much. We have about a minute left. Tell everybody again how they can reach you and and if they want to find Prisoner 88, where they can get it.
So Prisoner 88 is available anywhere that you can buy books online. I love indie bookstores. If you have a local indie, go to them, ask them. They will order it for you, support them. And thank you.
No, it's been my pleasure, and thank you, Leah Pileggi, for coming on. And we are coming to the end of the duration of my message spell here, and as the magic fades from my eyes, I want to thank Leah for being on the show one last time, and also our sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine, where you as speculative authors and speculative fiction can promote your work and submit it, especially if you're looking for first-time publication. Again, thanks for coming on. And to our followers, thank you again for lending us your ear tonight. And until next time, I am J.V. Hilliard, and may your gods go with you.